Welcome to Humanize from Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, where human rights meet human responsibilities. We speak with writers, thinkers, and newsmakers on the controversial issues of human life and human thriving that impact our daily lives. We are exceptional as creatures in the cosmos, as equal members of the human family, and as ethical beings. Humanize explores some of the fundamental questions. How do we thrive? How do we live well and care for what we've inherited? How do we act responsibly with one another and in the wider world? And how do we conserve the good things of this life for the future? We matter. Our actions matter. Let's get into it. I'm Wesley J. Smith, and this is Humanize. Religious persecution continues to afflict the world. Anti-Semitism abounds. Some Islamic countries suppress minority faiths, while Muslims face persecution in countries like India. Non-Orthodox Christians are persecuted in Russia, while some American Christians claim that they are discriminated against because of living out their faith precepts. Today, we are going to focus mostly on the suppression of the Catholic Church in communist China. Making her second appearance on the podcast, my guest is one of the world's most informed persons about these human rights abuses. Nina Shea is a senior fellow and director of the Center for Religious Freedom at the Hudson Institute. Ms. Shea has been a human rights lawyer for nearly 40 years. She works extensively to advance religious freedom as a priority in United States foreign policy. Ms. Shea was appointed by the U.S. House of Representatives to serve as a commissioner on the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom 7 times from 1999 to 2012. During the Soviet era, Ms. Shea's first client before the United Nations was Soviet Nobel Peace Laureate Andrei Sakharov. Since then, she has been appointed as a U.S. delegate to the United Nations main human rights body by both Republican and Democratic administrations. Ms. Shea played a leading role in the effort to adopt the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998. She writes and speaks frequently about policies concerning religious persecution. In 2023, she was awarded the prestigious Bradley Prize. Her latest report is entitled 10 Persecuted Catholic Bishops in China, released by the Hudson Institute. Nina, welcome back to Humanize.
Great to be back. Thank you, Wesley.
Before we get into the meat of our conversation, what led you to focus so much energy on religious freedom?
Well, I just see it as an important human right. It's essential to Americans. It's the first clause of our First Amendment. And in our Constitution, and it's important right for important freedom for millions of people around the globe. And it's often the first right that's suppressed by an authoritarian or totalitarian government. And it's the last organized group, that is religious believers, standing in those regimes. And we saw that in the Soviet Union.
Why do you think religious persecution is first in terms of totalitarian regimes trying to suppress people?
The regimes want to control, those regimes want to control not only what you do or say, but what you believe. And so they want to re-educate. And that's what China does. It has started up massive re-education camps for 1 million to 3 million Muslims to re-educate them. They're now saying that to the Christians, to the Catholic Christians, that they want to re-educate them, and have started doing that with their leadership. And they've been doing that for many years. They do it with all the groups in the religious groups, the Tibetan Buddhists, and the ones that they felt that they could not re-educate, such as Falun Gong. They declared an evil cult and banned them completely.
So what is the scope, before we get into the meat and potatoes of what's going on, what is the scope of the work encompassed by the Hudson Institute Center on Religious Freedom?
We look at the world hotspots for religious persecution. And because there's so many persecuted religious believers around the world, we don't have the luxury of actually doing more to develop infrastructure around the world or to do aid projects. What we try to do is advise the U.S. government on how the U.S. could make a difference, or how it is making a difference in the wrong way with its aid programs, with its foreign policies. We saw during the Cold War, it was extremely important for the president to use his bully pulpit to President Reagan spoke out about Natan Sharansky's and the priests, the Orthodox and Catholic priests around in the Eastern Europe who were in prison, and saved their lives and helped support religious freedom in that way for their believers. It was absolutely essential. Reagan saw religious persecution, religious freedom, as the Soviets' Achilles heel. That's what he called it in his to his aides. And indeed it was. And it was a group that persisted throughout the Cold War, even though Ukrainian Christians were, Catholic priest was sentenced to clean up the radioactive waste at Chernobyl in the very last days of Glasnost, when it was supposedly very liberalized under Gorbachev. There was still persecution going on, and there were still believers that persisted.
And so the Institute kind of pushes and prods, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's what we do, is trying to use public diplomacy. Name and shame is extremely important. There's an enormous infrastructure that is set up. I helped set it up back in 1998 under the International Religious Freedom Law, which created an office and an ambassador at large on international religious freedom within the State Department. It started a commission on international religious freedom, on which I served for 12 years, that is independent but makes policy recommendations to the government. And it mandates that Congress, through this law, has mandated that the State Department issue a report annually on every foreign country in the world on its religious freedom record for all groups. So this is an extremely important infrastructure. We're going to have a foreign policy whether we do religious freedom or not. Now we are mandated by Congress, that is, the United States government is mandated by Congress to have a foreign policy on religious freedom. In the Trump administration, the first Trump administration, Trump made this, through an executive order, a foreign policy priority, in fact.
And Sam Brownback, who has been a guest on this podcast, was the ambassador. Today, we're focusing mostly on China. In 2018, President Xi Jinping issued a directive to, quote, sinicize religion in China. What does that mean?
Yeah, sinicization, he claims, means to adapt to socialism with Chinese characteristics. It means to conform to the ideology, values, and practices of the Chinese Communist Party. And he wants all religions to do that. And he wants to change their homilies, their sermons, through laws requiring that his thought be the basis, that is, Xi Jinping's thought be the basis of all sermons, that all religious groups teach their followers, their practitioners, the socialist teachings, that is, Communist Party teachings, and that they abide by his dictates and the party's rules.
With regard to Christianity and Catholicism in specific, are you saying that the government expects the Catholic Church to change its doctrines to comport with what the Chinese position is on particular issues?
100%. That's what I'm saying. That's what they want. The Communist Party believes that it is the arbiter of truth, that it knows all truth, and that's what must be followed. So, for example, no children can be exposed to religion, and the churches will be shut down and their leaders punished if children are allowed into houses of worship. And that directly counters the gospel story in which Jesus says, "Let the children come to me." And it has been a practice of, infant baptism has been a practice of the Catholic Church for many centuries. It also requires Catholic leaders, that is bishops, to sign a pledge saying that they will be independent of foreign influences, such as the Vatican, such as the Pope. So this is contrary, it contradicts Catholic doctrine, according to Pope Benedict the 16th, who in 2007 wrote a very important letter, a seminal letter to the people, the church in China, the Catholic Church in China, and laid out some rules of engagement, if you will, or principles to follow in its diplomacy with China and practices in China. And he very clearly wrote that that is absolutely contradictory to Catholic doctrine.
So there were a couple of things that I find very disturbing about what you just said. Number one, you said that the faithful can be punished for bringing their children to church. That sounds like that's part of the social credit system that afflicts the Chinese society.
Exactly. The social credit system records through either cameras that blanket the exterior and sometimes interiors of churches, records who's there, who shows up when, and if you're not registered, or if you're bringing children or doing something else like attending too frequently or seem to be too devout, you will get a bad credit score. This will all be recorded through their camera system or through data that's entered into computers at the doors of the churches and houses of worship, and go into massive government computer systems, and it will give you a score, something like our credit rating scores, but it's for political conformity to rules of the Communist Party on religion. And you can be punished through the cashless system of China. They have these credit cards that are government issued that will allow you to take a plane or to get on a fast speed train or to go to prestige schools, to live in good neighborhoods. And those demerits that you get on those cards will prevent you from participating in any of that, any and all of that.
So basically, you're saying that if a Christian, let's say a Catholic, I mean, I know there are a lot of other Christians in China, but if a Catholic goes to church, has his baby and her baby baptized according to Catholic doctrine, and attends Mass, receives communion, then she or he can be punished with loss of jobs, loss of ability to travel, and loss of ability to engage fully in the functioning of the system of the community. Is that right?
That's right. That's the bloodless, traceless way, apparently traceless way for outsiders for them to punish religious believers. And in addition, the church leader, whether it's the priest, the minister, for Protestants or bishops who permit this to go on, will also be punished very severely.
The Orthodox bishops who permit the normal functioning of the Catholic Church can be punished.
That's right. That's exactly right. That they will be punished if they permit children. In fact, I have documented 10 of these bishops who are currently now in detention, prolonged detention without, indefinite detention without any due process, or otherwise being persecuted now because of things like this. One bishop, Julius Gia, he is being punished because he ran an orphanage for the past 30 years. And just in the last 3 years ago, he was sent away into police custody, hasn't been seen since, because he allowed the children to pray in his orphanage. this happened even after the agreement with the Vatican was signed in 2018. This kind of activity, ordaining priests, which is training priests, educating priests, which is the essential function of a bishop, was done by Bishop Zahn, and he was also taken away and hasn't been seen since because he had a seminary for training priests. And it wasn't registered with the government because he refused to take the pledge to distance himself to pledge that he would be independent of the Pope. He's taken away and put in prison.
What is the agreement you mentioned that was signed with the Catholic Church?
In September 2018, the Vatican signed an agreement with Beijing on the appointment of Catholic bishops in China. And it is, contents are secret, but the Vatican has indicated, has leaked the fact that it was only solely on the appointment of Catholic bishops. It did not cover other disputes it has with the Chinese government. And it uses that as an excuse for remaining silent on persecution and of its own bishops, which seems to me odd because the whole point of it was to put bishops in their sees so that they could carry out the important functions, the episcopal ministerial functions, such as training priests, keeping the orthodoxy, and being in communion with Rome, in communion with the successor of St. Peter. That is the way the church frames it, in communion with the Pope. And that
why, as the church said, the Pope said, why this agreement is being kept secret?
Not really. I mean, they say it's a provisional agreement, but it's becoming permanent de facto. It was just renewed last month in October for another 4 years, and it was first signed in 2018.
It doesn't sound like the Catholic Church is getting anything out of it if its Orthodox members are being persecuted the way you mentioned.
It's even worse than that. They are not only being persecuted, but they are being replaced by party apparatchiks, people who are bishops, men who are bishops, but who are now, for example, in Shanghai, this new bishop, Shen Bin, who has replaced two bishops that are in Shanghai in prison or disappeared right now. The Vatican has said something about those two bishops. They're both Vatican approved. They recently, a year ago, asked for justice in their cases. So it implies that they were treated unjustly, though we really don't know what happened to them since they're out of sight and there's no due process. But this Shen Bin, the replacement bishop, which the Vatican has also approved reluctantly, he was appointed and installed behind the Pope's back, and ex post facto, he approved it. He has called for a rewriting of the Bible according to the socialist values, and is carrying it out. He said that it's a red line to have any contact with, to be controlled by the Pope, to be under the Pope is a red line for China, that must not happen. The church must be independent and democratically administered.
Yeah, meaning controlled by the Communist Party.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. And of course, there is no real autonomy for anybody in China on these, right, on these matters.
What is the Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association?
That is an organization that was created under the Mao era by the government to control Catholics. There's a parallel one for Protestants. And this is the organization that requires the pledge of independence. And it requires it of all the bishops and all the priests for the Catholics. And it is not recognized by the Vatican, and is to this day is not recognized. The agreement has been very insidious, too, because even though it was just supposed to be on the issue of appointment of bishops, it has been used by the government to force or to persuade or to press, to pressure all the bishops and priests to join the Patriotic Association. There's a myth that they perpetuate the myth that you're free to join or not, but you're not really free. You're pressured in various ways to join this Patriotic Association. And if you don't join, you can be detained indefinitely in some secret jail called black jails, because no one knows where they are or what they're like. Or and one of the bishops, Bishop Sue of Baoding, James Sue, he has been imprisoned in this kind of situation for 27 years after he led a procession to a shrine, a Catholic shrine in his diocese. He was arrested, taken into custody, and was only seen once in 27 years by his relatives in the hospital by chance. They by chance saw him. There's no information on him, and he was there was supposed to be information given if the Vatican agreement was signed. That's what his nephew was told, but no information came.
So let me summarize here, and then I want to get to your report. The Catholic Church is not allowed to operate as the Catholic Church in China. The people who attend, if they don't participate in this Patriotic Catholic Association, will be demerited in the social credit system. The bishops are being chosen by the Chinese Communist Party instead of the Pope. The bishops that refuse to cooperate are being disappeared. Is that about right?
Yes, although it's more gradual than that. It's not one fell swoop. They are one by one picking them off, and the bishops, that is. The church retains the forms of a Catholic liturgy, for example, but the content of the sermon must be under law now, based around Xi Jinping's thought. Like Mao had a thought, Mao's thought. Now there's a Xi Jinping thought, and it has to be around these communist doctrines and dogmas. I should say that this Patriotic Catholic Association that we were just talking about, that they're trying to force everybody to join, that the leadership to join, is now under the direct control of the Chinese Communist Party United Front Work Department. And that department is the main propaganda unit of the Chinese Communist Party. And Xi Jinping called it his magic weapon. So this all happened at the same time, same year, 2018, that the agreement was signed. So that's why I say that the persecution is actually intensifying. Orphanages are being shut down. Seminaries, this underground, this so-called underground, just because it's not government registered, it is shut down. And then these bishops are being picked up and detained indefinitely. And this major organization that all Catholic leaders must join, which was formerly under the government bureaucracy, which is bad enough, is now directly a part of the Communist Party, which is officially atheistic. It's not just secular. It's officially atheistic. It makes no sense.
That's what I was going to get to. Just my next question. You'd anticipated it. If the Chinese Party, Communist Party, is forcing a rewriting of the Bible, and you're supposed to follow Xi's thoughts, and he's an atheist, doesn't that mean that the Catholic Church will have to cease being theistic?
I think eventually that's where it's headed. They want to cover their tracks because they want Western support, investment, and trade. And they desperately want that, that is the government of China. So they don't want to do anything too sudden or abruptly. So they're laying out these laws and then arbitrarily picking up bishops. There are about 90 bishops in China, 90 dioceses in China, Catholic dioceses, and about a third of them have stood empty for many years. Since 2018, there have been 10 bishops appointed, new ones, new bishops appointed to a post and installed. And 10 bishops are now in detention. So it's a wash. I mean, it's hard to see what the church is getting out of this, why it's a raw deal for the Vatican, but they think they can wait it out, and they're in it for the long term. They say, well, we've been around for 2,000 years, we'll outlive this regime. But I'm not so sure, because as this, I think in a generation, there aren't going to be any priests, because there won't be any bishops to ordain them. And there won't be any young people growing up who want to be priests because they have no exposure to religion or very little exposure. So I think it's killing the church, frankly. I think it's killing the Catholic Church as an institution in China.
It sounds like a boa constrictor squeezing his prey. That it, the prey doesn't die immediately, but it slowly suffocates. And it sounds like that's the plan here with the Chinese Catholic Church. Would you agree with that?
Well, I do agree. And it's funny that you put it that way, because that's exactly what the Vatican said back in the Cold War, before Pope John Paul II changed the strategy or changed their policy towards communist Europe, Eastern Europe. They said that they wanted to find a slower way of dying, and that they settled on this policy called Ostpolitik, which is the political policy towards the East, Eastern Europe, and that is to never criticize and never dissent from the communist governments there. That was the policy, and that is the policy of the Vatican now in China. It's not no criticism, no dissent policy.
You know, I think I'm not a Catholic, and you know, the Pope knows what he thinks he wants to do better than I do. But I'm remembering the Orthodox Church in Russia when the Soviet Union really suppressed the Russian Orthodox Church. They actually set up a church in exile called the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia, known as Rokor. And they had their own Russian Orthodox infrastructure, bishops, and so forth, that operated independently of the phony bishops that the Soviet Union allowed to be created within Russia. And it sounds to me like perhaps... Has there been any discussion of setting up a Chinese Catholic Church outside of China, kind of thing?
Well, there really isn't a nationalist Chinese church. There are Chinese churches in Chinatowns across the United States and elsewhere. There is the Catholic Church. You know, they're part of the Catholic Church. They're supposedly all under the, you know, they're supposed to be under the Pope. That's by definition what a Catholic Church is. It's approved by the Pope. But the problem here is that the Pope has approved all the bishops in China, even the ones that were excommunicated by prior popes. He has lifted their excommunication as a precondition for this 2018 agreement. And everybody else that's in the Patriotic Association, Pope Francis has now recognized. So they're all papally approved. So what really would be, I think, required in this circumstance is what helped the church survive during the Maoist period and the Cultural Revolution. And that is, there was an underground church. And that meant that there were also bishops approved by the Pope that the government didn't necessarily know about, and that they were ordaining priests behind the government's back, not the other way around. So that these were faithful priests that kept it going, that kept the church going at a reduced, you know, it was a reduced church, but they didn't have public masses. But I don't, that's how they survived the Cultural Revolution and were actually the larger than the Protestant churches. There's only two Christian churches there, the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church. There are no denominational churches allowed in China. So they outnumbered the Protestant churches emerging from the Cultural Revolution. The Protestant churches have became very adept at spreading the gospel in the underground since then. And now they estimate that there's maybe 100 million, as many as 100 million or more Protestant Christians in China. And there are between 10 and 12 million Catholics in China. And I think we're going to see that dwindle. In fact, I know we are, because Shen Bin, this Chinese replacement in Shanghai, that bishop has said as much. He said that there are fewer and fewer priests. And it's not because they don't want to become priests. It's because there's no way they can.
Right, because you need a bishop to ordain them.
You need a bishop who you believe in and trust. Yeah. And that's getting more infrequent.
So why did you write a report on the 10 bishops? What was the purpose of the report, and what do you hope it accomplishes?
Well, you know, I'm a human rights lawyer, and I've been doing this for many decades, and I have been speaking out on behalf of various other religious groups in China, such as the Uyghur Muslims, who are facing a genocide, a religious genocide, according to the U.S. government, and Falun Gong and the Tibetan Buddhists. And I had been reading about story by story of bishops being released from prison. And I didn't, in many cases, no one had known that they were even in detention somewhere. So I started doing that research, and it was very difficult to do because the government of China hides it. There's no paper trail, because there's no trial, there's no arrest records. They used to publish that when people were put on trial for political crimes, but they don't do that. They dispense with that, with the detention strategy, the indefinite detention strategy in black jails. So I started looking through the missionary documents, because there's still contact with the mission societies that actually know China very well, and found names and started tracing them. I asked the Vatican for a list. They refused to give it to me. They tried to discourage me from even naming these bishops who are in jail now. They said it will ruin the dialogue. It could hurt the dialogue with China. China would get angry. And I said, but I'm a layperson. I'm not a priest. I'm not, you know, a nun. I'm a human rights lawyer who does this, you know, for many years, and was appointed by the House of Representatives to do this for 12 years on the commission. And I went ahead and started collecting this information. And I think it's important for three reasons, Wesley. One is for justice, just for simple justice. And that's why I do all my work. Two, I think it exposes the character of the regime, the nature of the Chinese Communist Party. And there was a sense, you know, the Chinese Communist Party says that the reason why they persecute Muslims is because they're terrorists, that the Uyghurs are terrorists. And then the reason why they punish the Tibetan Buddhists is because they're separatists. They want an independent Tibet. And so that there are these political movements going on, and that the reason why they had to ban and persecute and wipe out Falun Gong was because they're an evil cult. Falun Gong is the spiritual exercise group. They do spiritual exercises. You might see them in New York City or other cities practicing in the park. They're slow motion exercises. So I thought that this was very important to unmask what they're doing to the Catholic Church that presents no real, you know, no violent threat towards them, no threat at all. They are a tiny minority in China. They are from the Han, the majority population. They're not a separatist movement or could ever be considered one. And they're spread thinly throughout China, 1.4 billion people. So they're 10, 12 million out of 1.4 billion. So I thought that was very important to expose how they're cruelly treating these these bishops. And these are not individuals. They represent a large portion. According to Pew statistics last year, they represent 60% of the Catholic population in China. You can't really have religious freedom as a Catholic if you don't have a bishop. You don't have the priests, you don't have the teaching, you don't have the schools, you don't have the, you know, any institutions. And I thought it was important for the United States foreign policy. I thought that if we we have a foreign policy, it's going to stand for something. It stands for example, climate change. Why not religious freedom? Religious freedom is distinctly American. It's part of American exceptionalism. And it has been, it was extremely important to us at various points in history, or should have been. We have this, these offices, ambassadors set up for this, to reporting on these kinds of issues. It's important for our cultural heritage, our history, as well as our constitution, to speak up for it. For these people.
And you focused on the bishops because that was a way to be able to have a close-up lens of some of the cruelty that's being engaged in by the government. Is that about right?
That's right. And it's also that bishops are called the lifeblood of the church, the life of the church. You can't have a Catholic church without bishops. They're the ones that relate to Rome. They're the ones that keep the teaching orthodox. They're the Catholic brand. They ensure the Catholic brand. So they're very important to the church.
We don't have time to go over all 10 of the bishops that you discuss. So give me two examples of bishops that have been persecuted and why you consider them particularly egregious.
So there is one that I mentioned, Julius Chia. He has been imprisoned for 30 years, off and on, mostly these short-term indefinite detentions. He's now in his 90s. And he, 30 years ago, began taking in disabled, unwanted children who were under the one-child policy. They would have been killed. And instead, their parents, who wanted other children and couldn't take care of them, left him on his doorstep. And so he opened up an orphanage, and more came. And he managed to get along running this. He had a group of nuns running it. I think it was in his church compound or near his church compound. And he would be in and out of prison over 30 years with no trial. Away for 9 months, maybe 6 months. And then his ministry was constantly interrupted. So he was arrested in 21 and, hasn't been seen since. I think it's just, and the orphanage has been dismantled, and I don't know what has happened to those children.
And so, so he's been basically put out of commission, and he's probably too old to withstand this kind of pressure.
That's right. We really don't know if he's alive or dead. They're all extremely sad cases, and not all of them are elderly, so elderly. There's the Bishop Ma in Shanghai. He on his day of ordination, and he was actually recognized by the government of China, as well as the Vatican, back in 2012. And he, at his ordination, said, you know, I'm going, he quoted the famous Catholic missionary, Italian missionary, Matteo Ricci, who came in the 1500s to bring Catholicism to China. And he said, said that, you know, I'm going to devote myself to my ministry and I don't have time for politics. So I'm leaving the Patriotic Catholic Association. Well, that was the very wrong thing to say, even though there's a pretense that it's free, you're free to join or not join, like you're free to join the Communist Party or not join the Communist Party in China. So there's that pretense. So he said, I'm not going to join it anymore, and I'm going to devote myself to my ministry. He was arrested that night and locked up since 2012 in a seminary. He's kept separate from everybody else, from his diocese. He's not allowed to function as a bishop or to identify as a bishop or wear bishop garbs. You know, he his predecessor has died after 47 years of imprisonment and this kind of isolation. So it's extremely, you know, Shanghai is the most important Catholic diocese. It's the largest one. Cardinal Ignatius Kung was the first person that the Chinese communist government went after in 1955, and they told him to renounce Jesus Christ and the Pope, and he took him to a stadium, and instead, this little 5-foot bishop, you know, raised his fist and said, "Long live Jesus Christ, and long live the Pope," and he was immediately put away for life. He survived 30 years in those prisons, and then was released. And lived another 12 years in the United States with his family, with his sister. So
this is like first century Christianity you're talking about.
It is. And so that's the gold standard for Shanghai. And so Bishop Ma was inspired by him and said that he's been put away for not free at all. In this seminary against his will. He was replaced by another bishop from Shanghai, Bishop Xing, and he was accepted by the government and the Vatican. And some years later, he had been a bishop for a couple years, and he then disappeared. And no one knows what happened to him. His congregants only realized that he was missing when he didn't show up at Christmas Mass, and they never saw him again. There's been no information. Again, the Vatican spoke out on behalf of both of those men last year and said they wanted, and they've all, you know, they've been missing for or in prison for a decade. They said that they wanted just resolution to their cases, but they said it to the press. I'm not sure they said it to the Chinese government, and they had hoped that by recognizing Shen Bin, the pro-communist bishop who's been sent in as a replacement, that they said, the Vatican said that they hoped that by recognizing him, there would be some reciprocity. Well, there hasn't been any reciprocity. Those bishops are still missing. But, you know, it's just one tragedy after another. This Bishop Su, I told you about, he's actually disabled, can't hear, has a severe limp because of the torture he received in prison the first time around, the first go around when he was in prison during the Mao period. Now he's been in a secret jail, black jail, for 27 years. There's, a bishop, Shao, who has been detained 6 times since the agreement was signed. And he has been, the last 3.5 years, no one's heard from him. They were short-term detentions just to disrupt him, just to put pressure on him, disrupt his ministry, put pressure on him personally to join the Patriotic Association. He did not. He stood by his principle, and he was then taken away in the spring of 21. I tried to, in my report, Wesley, I tried to capture the reaction of the congregants. So the people in those dioceses who met these men and knew them, and they talk in terms about our shepherd has been become the sacrificial lamb, or he was a sweet, humble man. He was really, very devout. I don't know why this is happening to him. And they'd write prayers and they write hymns for their bishops. So these are people that are very much admired. And that's part of the reason why the government does not want them in circulation. They want them to be forgotten. When some of the bishops who have passed away, not these 10, they're still alive as far as we know. But the ones who have died, they won't even put on anything on their tombstone about them being a priest or a bishop, or nothing that to indicate that they're a Catholic at all.
Well, it sounds
and
to
won't
me,
let people come to their funeral either.
Yeah, it sounds to me like maybe I'm being harsh, but that the Catholic position is appeasement in the hopes that these people will be treated better, and appeasement rarely works. But you said something early in the interview that caught my attention. You said that what the Communist Party really cares about is trade and international opinion and respect and things of that sort. So it seems, wouldn't one useful, and perhaps this is a purpose of your report, is to kind of shame the big corporations that do so much business in China and make so much money in China into raising this issue with the Chinese government, as they have, by the way, in the United States. You know, when some conservative states have tried to enact policies that these corporations haven't approved of, they threaten boycotts and this kind of thing. Are we seeing anything from Apple or Nike or any of the other major corporations that do business in China to try to help ameliorate this terrible persecution of the Chinese church, Catholic Church?
No, we haven't seen anything like that. It's every corporation for itself over there. They have no rights. If they were to criticize or look at the dictator the wrong way, they would be confiscated expropriated. And no, they don't have any rights. They're afraid. Everybody's afraid. They're silenced from Hollywood to the kowtowing with their, filmmaking to the sports leagues. And in fact, I it seems like the Vatican is imitating their business model, which is just wrongheaded. I don't think the salvation is going to come from these corporations because they are divided. They're not unified in one block. They're not all going to leave. They're going to take advantage of the market as long as they can. I think it's really up to our government and our people, our voters, and that the United States government needs to speak out. It has the strength, it has the leverage to do that. No single business has the leverage over China.
You said that under the Trump administration, President Trump in the first term signed an executive order giving priority to religious freedom. Did the Trump administration, and then I'll get to the Biden administration, did the Trump administration try to make an issue of what you're discussing?
With the Uyghur Muslims. And that they had, they caught them red-handed. They had satellite imagery of the concentration camps, these massive camps, and they saw people being marched around them. And they realized that these were civilians, that this was the local population. These were Uyghur Muslims. And eventually they started believing the stories that some escapees came out with, Uyghur Muslim women who said that they were in those camps and they were forcibly sterilized so that they couldn't reproduce more Muslims. And these horror stories that were coming out of there of slave labor. And so in the final days of the Trump administration, Secretary Mike Pompeo recognized this as genocide, officially recognized it. It was his last day in office, in fact. There wasn't, it should have happened sooner. I guess they were gathering evidence, and the State Department thought it would disrupt relations, and there was some kind of tussle there that we've seen over and over again, blocking this because they thought it would disrupt our diplomacy, so which is what the Vatican says.
Yeah. So, that seems like the State Department's always that way. When the Biden administration came in, did they repeal that executive order that President Trump had signed regarding religious freedom?
Or
did
they did immediately. Yes, immediately. And Secretary Blinken made a speech saying that he was not going to create a hierarchy of human rights, which is absurd because you have to prioritize rights. You can't put equal weight on each one depending, it really depends on the circumstances of what's happening in these countries and which ones you want to prioritize when. It requires every foreign policy requires prioritization or we wouldn't have any diplomatic relations with anybody. So there hasn't been really any emphasis. I mean, I think the Biden administration rescued two, or didn't even rescue, but they gave asylum to two Chinese Americans, Protestant pastors, who had been imprisoned in China. One of them had fully served a 7-year term when they offered him asylum. But I think that the President Trump should use the bully pulpit to draw attention, like Reagan did, to these heroes of all faiths and anyone else. Jimmy Lai should talk about what is happening, what the Chinese government is doing. Just in November this month, the government of China now has sentenced 47 Hong Kong pro-democracy activists. What they were doing was forming a primary for their parliamentary elections when it was legal in China, in Hong Kong. And 47 of them now are getting prison terms up to 10 years for that just last night. So any of these political prisoners would be important to highlight from the White House, from the very top level. It's very effective to discredit, to delegitimize, to morally delegitimize the government of China, not just to say, oh, our economic system is better, or our military is stronger, but to actually say, the freedoms that we have in the West, in the United States, is better than your coercive system, which is evil and is cruel.
And there was a precedent, as you mentioned, during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, there were religious figures that were brought to the United States and were highlighted in terms of the persecution and the heat kept on by the U.S. government. I'm going to go over some of the other things you'd like to do very quickly because we're running out of time. You said that Radio Free Asia and the Voice of America should provide frequent Chinese language information on these cases. What do you think that would accomplish?
Well, this was a very important lesson for me and early in my career, Wesley, when the Cold War was raging. And I realized that the people in those countries, in Czechoslovakia or East Germany, they didn't know what was happening to anybody other than their own family or contact network. And that's true in China. People do not know what is happening to other Chinese people. I think of Falun Gong that had been, sounding the alarm for 20 years, that 25 years, that they were victims of and are victims of forcible organ transplant as a punishment, where they would be killed for their organs, killed to order by the Chinese government for their vital organs. And we continue to, the United States medical institutions continue to train Chinese transplant surgeons. Even though there is no transparency, we have no assurances that are credible that they're not doing this. And it's such a serious allegation. It's been picked up by the UN, about 12 special experts on human rights in the United Nations have said that they are extremely alarmed by credible evidence that this is happening not only to the Falun Gong, but to all the religious minorities in China today. That was about 2 years ago that they came out with that public letter. So I think it's absolutely essential that we start a loop of getting gathering the information that's trickling out of China, putting it together and putting it back into Chinese and sending it back into their own country so that they can see what their own leadership and own government is doing.
Do we have the technical capacities to do that, or can they block it?
Well, they can block it, but there are workarounds, and we're going to have to keep evolving this because they will head off the technology and block it. They have heavy censorship, but I think it's just wrong to have 1.4 billion people in a country that is considered one of the worst persecutors in the world, religious persecutors, according to the U.S. State Department. It's been on the country of particular concern list for over a decade, 2 decades, and it is found responsible for genocide against the Uyghur Muslims, and we don't know a single name. Who do we know? We don't know a single, most Americans, it's a rare American who can name a single political prisoner of any stripe, of any religion, in China, in mainland China. We know Jimmy Lai, some people know Jimmy Lai, Cardinal Zen, but they're in Hong Kong. But there's almost no names recognition for any political prisoner, whether it's religious or not, in mainland China.
You say, and we'll need to be a little quick here, that the Department of State and Treasury should impose Magnitsky sanctions. What are Magnitsky sanctions?
That's a sanction that was developed against Russia, but it's been globalized now in our statutes, and it allows personal sanctions. That is, the government of the United States can impose sanctions against an individual who is carrying out torture or carrying out a religious policy that's repressive. It doesn't require sanctioning the government or sanctioning business. So they're easier to get and they're very targeted.
We saw some of that with Russia in terms of the invasion of Ukraine. There have been sanctions targeted against specific people.
That's right. Certain military people or, yeah.
Right. That's what you're talking about.
That's right. And since many Chinese like to officials send their children to the United States for education or have bank accounts here, it can be quite effective in some cases.
This one really raised my eyebrows, and then I'll have to have the listeners read your report for other ideas. But you said, and you wrote, the Justice Department should continue to prosecute Chinese agents who interfere with religious freedom on U.S. soil. How is this happening?
Yes, there's transnational aggression, it's called, transnational repression, and the Chinese government is very adept at it. They send police, they've sent police to set up a police station under our noses in New York City, a Chinese police station, to keep tabs on Chinese Americans and Chinese nationals who are here in this country, and to carry out orders from Beijing to capture them and take them back, or persuade them, or bribe them, or to kidnap them to go back to China for punishment. And that is well known. There's thousands of people have been kidnapped that way across the West, across the world. There's a Canadian NGO, Spanish NGO that tracks this. They also have infiltrated the police station, the regular police station in New York City, and the FBI has broken up that. They have infiltrated a church in Chinatown, New York, with a fake priest. That was a while ago. The FBI discovered that. He was receiving secret information stolen from the CIA in Washington in the confessional, and that was his job. And then there's the IRS whistleblowers program. Just this year, the FBI busted that. That was Chinese agents that were trying to revoke the tax-exempt status of the Falun Gong religion group. So through false information, and these were Chinese agents doing it to punish them there. There have also been violent attacks, a violent attack against a Protestant pastor in Long Island who was running for office as a Democrat and was critical of China. And they had the FBI busted a plot that was to really hurt him or maybe kill him, but to shut him up.
So China is not only persecuting its own Christians, but trying to persecute some Christians here.
That's right. And there's intimidation as well. And it's very, the campuses are rife with that. There's 300,000 Chinese students that come to the United States to study every year. They're kept under very close watch by Chinese spies on campuses. And in fact, that was there was an intimidation at Purdue. And the president of Purdue at the time wrote a letter a couple of years ago to the campus community saying this will not be tolerated, that this Chinese student had put on a website a tribute to the Tiananmen Square victims. That's the victims of a massacre that happened in 1989 in China. And he was then intimidated, his family, and threatened online by other students. He was and members of the university community who were Chinese, and his parents were visited in China by the security police and threatened because they had received the report back from spies on the campus. And fortunately, the president stood up to that and said they will not tolerate it. But we know it's happening on other campuses as well.
So to summarize what I've gotten from this interview is that China is engaged in active suppression of religion. We know generally in terms of Uyghurs and so forth, but also the Catholic Church.
They're hostile to religion.
Right. And they may have different tactics for different groups, but the idea is to suppress them. But the thing that has disturbed me the most is that all opposition seems to be, incredibly anemic. Whether it's the government, whether it's corporations that do business there, whether it's the Vatican, and we didn't get to talk to the United Nations, but I'm assuming the same thing.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. China is a peer competitor, as our Defense Department says. They're a strong government, and everybody's afraid of them. So it's really incumbent on the United States government to stand up to this, to tell the truth, to pull the mask off, to show that they're not the benign model alternative to democracy and freedom that they claim to be, that there is a really ugly side of coercion that's going on under the scenes that they're taking great pains to cover up their tracks about.
Well, that's the purpose of your report, and I really want to thank you for that, because I think it's really crucial that that we stand up for freedom, that we stand up for righteousness in this world. I mean, we've said in the face of other historical genocides and so forth that we will never allow this to happen again. But here, with people making a lot of money or being intimidated because of the power of the Chinese, we see history repeating itself. Nina, thank you very much. What's next on your agenda?
Well, I hope to do more on this organ transplant. I think it's so hideous that it needs to be exposed and that our universities need to stop supporting it.
I think the idea of training their surgeons is, and also allowing them to be published in international medical journals, I think is really worth discussing. When you get some more of that work under your belt, would you let me know and we'll have you back?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Wesley. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Nina. I appreciate it very much, and I appreciate your work. Thanks for listening to Humanize from Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, where human rights meet human responsibilities. Discover all the good work of the Center on Human Exceptionalism by visiting discovery.org/human. We can only do this work, speaking on behalf of human life, human thriving, and our exceptional place in this world and our cosmos, with your support. We invite you to make a one-time gift today and to consider starting a monthly gift to support the Center on Human Exceptionalism and this show. Wherever you're listening to Humanize, please take a moment to rate and review the show. You matter. Your actions matter. Be bold, be exceptional, and be back soon.